Hi everyone, this is Catherine from the Media Education Lab, and you're listening to the Courageous Rhode Island Podcast, the show that finds common ground, builds media literacy skills, and encourages curiosity for the people of Rhode Island. In this episode, our host Renee Hobbs talks to Hugo Balta, who is a journalist, communications executive, and educator. Today, you'll hear him talk about the Latino News Network and its importance in today's media landscape, the way that Latinx voters are targeted by propaganda, and some applicable practices for avoiding the harms of disinformation.
Hey, I'm Renee Hobbs, and welcome to another episode of Courageous Rhode Island. Today, I'm here with Hugo Balta. He's publisher of the Latino News Network, with affiliates in the Northeast and the Midwest, and right here in Rhode Island. Hugo's also an adjunct professor at Columbia College Chicago, and he's twice president of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. Welcome to Courageous Rhode Island, Hugo.
Thank you very much, Renee. Happy to be here.
We're so excited about the opportunity to speak with you today. When I ran across Latino News Network, I was absolutely fascinated and thought, it's exciting to see an initiative like this in the digital arena where Latinx audiences can go to for reliable sources of news. Because today, you know, all of us have been experiencing a kind of a influx of propaganda and conspiracy theories and disinformation. And we know that during the pandemic and during the 2020 election, Latinx voters were exposed, like everyone, to a lot of different conspiracy theories, but also to misinformation and disinformation that were specially targeted to them. So how did Latinx voters experience this kind of potentially harmful content? And what continues to be sources of disinformation today and moving forward?
Well, yeah, look, a very important topic. And certainly 2020, when we saw so much happening with the pandemic, followed by the civil unrest in the death of George Floyd, the divisiveness of the general election, and certainly in the middle of that, trying to collect data through the census. But I think fear, you know, when I think about 2020, I think about misinformation, and I think about the general election, it's about fear and voter suppression and misinformation primarily driven in social media, hyper-focused on the Spanish-speaking population of the Hispanic Latino community, a lot of misinformation about who can vote, who has the entitled to vote, and even just basic human rights. You know, regardless of whether you're an undocumented immigrant or a citizen, we all are humans, and there are certain rights that are protected under the law in our country. But a lot of the misinformation was used as political propaganda to really try to skew voters one way or the other, and really demonizing a very vulnerable group. So for us at Rhode Island Latino News, it was about partnering with other organizations like the Latino Policy Institute and others in providing information in both English and Spanish, and chipping away at a lot of that misinformation and demystifying the process. Because I think one of the biggest hurdles that the Latino electorate has is that they're young. They're a young demographic, regardless of whether they're foreign-born or born in the United States, and the majority of them are born in the United States. They're new to the political process, except both parties, both major parties, ignore them, right? They really lean in on tried and true voters, which are older Americans, and demographically speaking, they're older white Americans. And then government also does a poor job in engaging with this young electorate. So there's this separation of not understanding the process and not even understanding why they should be voting, especially in local elections, be it state or municipalities. what we're trying to do in our focus in covering democracy, it's not about covering the elections per se. Of course, we do that, but it's covering the stories that happen between the elections. What are these positions, like the Secretary of State, like the clerk of the county court? What are their jobs? What do they do? And why it's important for you to, when it comes time to vote, to do your due diligence and vote for them, because ultimately they have a direct impact on your daily life.
Wow. You know, it seems to me that that approach to thinking about journalism brings it in very close alignment with education. And there you are doing both of those jobs in your life today. Thinking about the way in which journalists can serve an educational function to increase civic participation and civic engagement. You're teaching at Columbia College Chicago, you're teaching future journalists about what's next, what's coming. And, you know, none of us know the future. And the future of journalism is really hard to predict and anticipate. Can you talk to us a little bit about what messages are important as you engage in this practice of teaching people through the news, as you do it with Latino News Network, and then teaching future journalists about what's possible with the future of journalism?
Absolutely. Look, I am a proud Peruvian American, the son of immigrants from Peru. And like all of us, you know, I've been impacted by our first teachers. Who I am personally and professionally has a lot to do with my parents. And they gravitated to mass media to learn about their adoptive country, to also keep in touch with their homeland in Peru. And so I grew up in a household where the television was always on the local news, newspapers, radio. And I saw how mass media helped my parents help themselves. And as I was coming up and understood the privileges and advantages that I had of getting a higher education, I gravitated to journalism as a means to participate and do for others what had been done for my parents. And for as a teacher, as an educator, and being Latino, and as you mentioned, you know, being a member of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, it's really working in that intersection of journalism and diversity, equity, and inclusion. So it's, for me, it's not just important to teach students about the W's, right? The who, what, when, and where, regardless of the platform, but it's also for them to understand, to develop a cultural competence in covering different groups, be it by race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or other. There's not enough of that happening in academia where journalism students are being taught about the dynamics of covering, whether it be local, state, or national, a country that is in a midst of change, right? In 30 years or less, where we will become a majority minority. And in many parts of the country, whether it's the Bronx, New York, Southern California, anywhere in Texas, you see that when we talk about the Latino community, we're not talking about the majority. We're talking many times the majority outright. But when we look at news coverage, it's always positioned as the other. It's always positioned as someone that's foreign born when the majority of the Latinos in the United States are born in the United States. That dynamic won't change until their mass media, legacy media, does a better job of recruiting both in front of the figurative camera and behind the figurative camera, where you have managers that have much more influence and resources in dictating editorially not only the stories that are being covered, but who tells those stories and what are the voices that are use to tell those stories. So for me, it's really important to teach young journalists not just the mechanics of telling a good story, but also taking a step back and integrating DE&I in their thinking as they're looking to tell these stories. And it's okay to not know the answer, but it's very important to understand those blind spots, because that will have an effect in how you tell those stories.
Boy, that is an idea that really registers with our courageous Rhode Island community. And so we try to use discussion to reflect on our own biases and our own blind spots. And one of the things I'm so impressed about your work is the way in which you've leveraged your background as a journalist toward an entrepreneurial vision of increasing the opportunities for journalism that reaches diverse communities. Can you tell us about Latino News Network and help us understand its role in the journalistic landscape today and of your role in building it?
Yeah, you know, look, I think anything new is born out of frustration. And I definitely think the Latino News Network is certainly reflective of that. So for me, as a member of NHJ and having served as its president, it's been a very rewarding but also frustrating experience. The same thing in being a Latino in a newsroom. Very often, especially early in my career, and I've been very fortunate to work for some storied networks, I was often either the only Latino in the newsroom or the only person of color in the newsroom. And that, so I quickly needed to learn to feel comfortable at being uncomfortable and being often pushed into situations that I really wasn't prepared for, especially when I was younger, right? Be the spokesperson in the newsroom for Latinos, as if Latinos are a monolithic group and all Latinos think alike. And we certainly still see a lot of that in some of the news coverage across the board, regardless of platform. When I was working with NHJ, one of the things that NHJ does in its nearly 40-year history is to perpetually demand for a seat at the table, not just because it's from a DE&I perspective of what's good for the public, but also from a DE&I perspective of what's good for business. The issue is that even though it's been 40 years, statistically speaking, I can't tell you that the organization and the industry has moved the needle very much. There are more Latinos, certainly in newsrooms, but that's because there are more newsrooms, especially through the digital platform. But statistically speaking, percentage-wise, that hasn't changed. So the entrepreneurial end, and LNN comes in, is that now technology has afforded us not to build our own tables. So NHJ and myself as a veteran journalist, I'm done with just asking for a seat at the table. We're building our own table. And that's what LNN is. It's building our own table to integrate, to fill a news desert that exists both at the local, at the local news level that legacy media either can no longer do because of contracting budgets or because of the lack of diversity, equity, and inclusion. So what we're looking to do is fill a hole, not just by being hyper-focused on Latinos, but expanding and integrating them into the conversation of what is affecting all of us at the local level, be it a city, a town, or state.
Wow. It's an exciting initiative. And in the show notes, we're making the link available so that all our listeners can learn more about this. You know that old saying, if it bleeds, it leads, right, Hugo? One of the things that Courageous Rhode Island is trying to do as a violence prevention initiative is help people understand how our attitudes and beliefs about violence are influenced by the kinds of messages we get. in news, in entertainment, and in persuasion. Can you talk a little bit about your perspective on, I don't know, what should we call it? Crime media?
It's a oversimplification of the social problems that our communities, all communities, are challenged with. And it doesn't take long, right? You can turn on the local news, pick up a newspaper, go online, listen to a radio program, and overwhelmingly, it's negative news. It's about what's wrong. And there's a place for that, right? It's important to shine light to these social problems, but they fall short in telling the whole story if that's all they're focused on. And it's really an exploitation of the most vulnerable members of our community. When we talk about crime and safety, when we talk about the economy, when we talk about immigration, and others, it's always with an emphasis on exploiting the most vulnerable in